Challenge Cyber Defense.
The cyber threat analyses you need to know about. Cyber decryption. It's now.
Welcome to the Deep Dive. Okay, today we're putting on our cyber investigator hats, strictly focusing on the facts.
Mm-hmm.
Our mission is to sift through all the chatter, you know, the forums, social media, all that noise from October 2025.
Yeah.
And we want to build a clear profile of the offensive cyber activity hitting Europe and, well, the regions around it.
It's definitely needed. October was intense.
Intense how? Just more of the same.
Not exactly. It felt like an explosion, really. We saw the usual conflicts driving things, Russia, NATO, the Kurdish situation, Israel, Palestine. But it was amplified. New alliances, new methods, even paid work popping up. A real evolution.
Paid work.
Uh-huh.
Okay, they'll definitely need to circle back to that. But first, let's lay out the groundwork. These geopolitical tensions, how did they translate into specific targets in Europe based on what these groups were saying?
Right. So you can pretty much track it along three main lines. Mm. First, the Russia versus NATO dynamic. That was huge.
Still the biggest driver.
Yeah, seems like it. We saw operations tagged like hashtag up NATO, hashtag fuck Eastwood, hashtag time of retribution. And the targets were widespread. Germany, Denmark, especially around that EU summit, the UK, Finland, Romania, Spain, Italy, Poland. A real spread.
Wow. Okay. So hitting NATO members broadly. Mm. What about the other conflicts?
Well, the Kurdish conflict fueled attacks mainly from a group called Hezirash. They were hitting Turkish and Iranian targets, government sites, universities, that kind of thing.
Okay.
And then the Middle East conflict, which really flared up. Groups like the Holy League, Dark Storm Team, they targeted Israeli and U.S. entities, often referencing October 7th symbolism in their, you know, justifications, calling it digital retribution.
Mm, retribution. That points to some serious organization behind the scenes, doesn't it? These aren't just random attacks. We're talking alliances, right?
Exactly. And that's maybe the most significant trend we saw, the professionalization of it all.
So who are these key players? Who's teaming up with whom?
Okay, in the pro-Russian anti-NATO camp, the big name is still No Name 057 or 16 or NNMR 5716. They often work with groups like TwoNet, Dark Storm Team, Overflame.
Right.
But here's where it gets really interesting, and this ties back to what you mentioned earlier.
The paid work.
Yes. NMM05716 put out a call pretty openly on their English channel looking for, and I quote, volunteers living in Germany, Italy, and France because, again, quoting, they have paid work available.
Paid work inside NATO countries. That's a major shift. It's almost like creating a mercenary network within the target zone.
It fundamentally changes the threat landscape, doesn't it? Suddenly you have potentially paid insiders.
Absolutely. What about the other groups? Hezirash.
Hezirash is fascinating. Very active, and they were forming alliances across different conflicts. They teamed up with pro-Russian groups like Overflame, but also with others like Digital StormSec and, significantly, the Bangladesh Cyber Troops, BCT.
Oh, BCT. They're known for pretty large-scale capabilities, aren't they?
Exactly. Massive botnet capacity. And they were clear about why they teamed up to increase the scale of attacks and their damage. Direct quote.
So combining forces for bigger impact. Makes sense.
And we saw similar things with the Islamic Resistance Axis groups. Holy League, or ALEXEC, was talking about forming specialized brigades, like a God's Vengeance Brigade, just for DDoS. They were even seeking specific expertise. Shia Shield was also seen linking up with Silhet Gang SG. Coalitions are definitely the new norm.
Okay, let's talk about that damage. You mentioned scale. What kinds of targets are we seeing now? Is it still just websites?
Well, that's the other alarming part. It's moving beyond websites. There were claims, and we have to treat them seriously, of direct attacks on industrial control systems, SCADA systems.
Critical infrastructure. Like what, specifically?
Two really stand out. The DDoja project claimed they accessed the control system for two turbines in the Czech Republic.
Turbines, like power generation.
That's the implication. And perhaps even more chilling, there was a report of a hard hack into a boiler room, Energoforce Pila Mali, also in Prague. The attackers claimed full control.
What does full control mean in that context?
They claim they could manipulate the fuel supply, the temperatures, and explicitly said they disabled the boiler. They even mocked the quality of the SCADA software.
Disabling a boiler? That's not digital graffiti. That's potentially impacting heat, impacting people directly.
Precisely. It crosses a line into potential physical harm.
Okay, that's deeply concerning. Beyond SCADA, what other sectors were hit hard?
Finance took some big hits. The Bank of Finland was apparently down for over 5 hours. British banks like Access Bank UK, Shawbrook, and a coordinated run against Israeli banks, Mercantile Discount, Union Bank, BNP Paribas were mentioned.
So disrupting money flow. And transport.
Yeah, transportation and logistics were definitely targets. Danish railways, DSB had passenger schedule issues, Romanian railways, CFR Marfa, even the UK's national highways and Italian ports. Lots of disruption.
It sounds like the goal is less about making a statement and more about causing real operational problems.
I think that's fair to say. And it's not just DDoS anymore. We saw clear examples of hacking and defacement, too. The French website TechPack, for instance.
Oh, yeah.
Well, what happened there?
It was reported as hacked and defaced by the TUNET team working with Hezi Rash. They even tagged it hashtag OpFrance. It shows they have skills beyond just overwhelming servers. They can get in, change things, maybe steal data.
Which brings us to the how. How are they pulling this off? What are the methods fueling this shift?
Well, DDoS is still the workhorse. You know, NNMM05716 is pushing out DDoS shells. But the big change is the professionalization, the monetization.
DDoS as a service, right?
Exactly. It's becoming commonplace. Groups like Dynet are openly advertising. Yeah. You can buy botnet access, different tiers, different prices, like $25 a month for basic power, up to $150 for premium.
So they're running it like a business to fund their operations.
Pretty much. A digital black market funding political or ideological goals. And that needs talent.
Which explains the recruitment efforts.
Right. And not just any volunteers. Remember the Holy League seeking specialized brigades? They were asking for experts in hardware software exploits, digital forensics, AI, specific programming languages like Python, C++, Rabba, Gobo. They're building their own tools.
Wow. It's like R&D for hacktivism.
It really is. And intelligence gathering, OSINT, is part of it too. Groups like Vulture boasted about getting data on military personnel, scientists, even from CNCOM.
So if the tech is getting professional and the funding is becoming, well, commercial almost, what's driving it all? Is it still ideology or is it just about the money now?
I think it's a really potent mix of both. That's what makes it so tricky. The ideology is clearly pro-Kurdish liberation, digital jihad, retribution. That's the public face.
The propaganda angle.
Definitely. Making a splash, getting visibility. Some Polish sources even noted that some attacks felt like more show than sabotage. The psychological impact is key.
But the money.
But the money makes it sustainable. That call for paid work in Europe by NNM05716, the DDo services for sale, that proves there's a solid financial layer now. It's not just a byproduct, it's integrated. It fuels the whole machine, attracts the talent, keeps it going.
Okay, so pulling this all together then, what's the big picture takeaway from October 2025's activity?
I'd say the key finding is that this whole hacktivist world has, formalized. It's moved from messy protests to structured, almost corporate-like alliances. They have specialized roles, recruitment, R&D, ops, intel. It's cyber conflict mirroring organized structures.
So what does this mean for you listening right now?
Mm-hmm.
The main point is that those old lines between state actors, ideological hackers, and cyber mercenaries are getting really, really blurry.
Mm-hmm.
When you've got paid operatives potentially inside European countries, and they're willing to aim for critical things like energy, heating, transport, it means tensions anywhere can become immediate security threats right here at home.
And maybe the final thought to leave you with is this. You've got mercenary recruitment happening openly, specialized R&D building custom tools. The barrier to launching damaging cyber attacks seems to be dropping fast.
Yeah.
If the attackers are using this flexible, professionalized, almost crowdsourced model, how do nations defend against that? Do Western countries need to start mirroring that kind of specialized, adaptable approach just to keep up? It's a serious question.
The cyber threat analyses you need to know about. Cyber decryption. We'll be talking about it on this channel very soon.
Orange Cyber Defense.